everybody. Welcome to Connectivity, episode 265. I'm your host, Neil Ronahan, joined, as always, by John Raritan.
Howdy, everyone.
So we, next week, first off, if you're listening to this before March 31st, come join us on March 31st on our Twitch channel, which is, I think it's, just search like Nintendo World Report on
it's,
Twitch. I
think it's twitch.tv/Nintendo World Report.
Okay,
it's the easiest thing it could possibly be.
Yeah. Sweet. I mean, you can also check out NintendoWorldReport.com. We will have information about our live stream that we're doing next week, which will be it's a you know, farewell to Mario, since he's dying on March 31st. By the time the night's over, we are going to be raising money for the Video Game History Foundation, which they are all about preserving video games. Which is a thing that Nintendo is not doing by the fact that they are discontinuing the digital sale as well as the physical sale of things like the Fire Emblem NES port that came out at the end of last year, Super Mario 3D All-Stars, Super Mario 35, and even stuff like Super Mario Maker for Wii U will be turned off on March 31st. So come hang out with us for that. It's going to be a good time. I'm excited for it, and you know, I hope we can raise some money to preserve video games.
Yeah, and if you've missed the charity telethons and charity live streams, this is kind of our way of testing out new avenues to do that sort of thing. If you want us to do things like this, please support this one so we know it's a good idea.
Yeah, like I think just the for those who might have been followers of Nintendo Report and Radio Free Nintendo over the years, largely organized by Radio Free Nintendo, but then kind of spreading out to the entire site. We did charity telethons for the Child's Play charity for a number of years, and just over time passed around from Johnny Metz organized it, Carl Castaneda did it for a while, James Jones did it, I did it 1 year, John did it 1 year. And it's really, really hard to organize like 12 hours of content and have it not just blow up.
It's one of the most stressful things I think I've ever overseen. It's a bad time.
Yeah. And it's like, super fun to do. We've raised a lot of money that way. And that's why we're kind of trying a way to do it without like making it just hell weeks for people planning it. So we're going to try to see how these, kind of once a quarter might be our optimistic goal for doing different charity things. And we can also spread it out where we're doing things for more than one charity. We'll figure out, we'll see what happens for this, take our takeaways, and then maybe we'll plan for something around like E3 time. Seems like a good time to maybe do another charity. I'm cashing checks.
There may or may not even be an E3, so you'll need something to watch.
Well, yeah, that's the logic. We can start workshopping it here. Maybe that's something where we do live streams for charity of like commenting on old E3 content.
We'll just edit together our own brand new E3 from stock footage of old E3s.
We can use, break out the E3 2002 Planet GameCube DVD. And then just raise money for another charity there.
Everyone's like, boy, Miyamoto's looking young this year.
Yeah. Actually, oh man, maybe there's a way to do like E3 roulette where it's just that like pick a number and that's what announcement will happen next.
It's procedurally generated E3. We just, cut up every announcement and every little segment of press conference and then just... it gets randomly strung together into a monster of a press conference.
It's one of those things where like we shouldn't do this, but also we really should.
It would be fun.
Yeah.
I guess email us at connectivity@underworldreport.com and tell us if you want procedurally generated E3.
Yeah. Yeah. We can have some fun with it. And maybe, that's, we got some time that we can prepare something really fun with that. Yeah. But for this episode, we're going to hit up some listener mail. And then we're going to talk about Yuji Naka and Naota Oshima, who are kind of in the news right now because they are former Sonic the Hedgehog creators. Well, I guess they're eternally Sonic the Hedgehog creators. That formerly of Sega that are putting out Balan Wonderworld on Switch on the day that this is being posted, Friday,
which of course,
March 26th.
That's the only important game coming out today. No other significant games are being released.
No other monsters or hunters anywhere.
Right. This is the only thing to spend your 60 dollars on.
But yeah, so we figured it might be, I guess, sadly fun, remorsefully enjoyable to talk about Yuji Naka's career, in which, like, he's made a lot of good things. He's also made a lot of crap. So we'll talk about that. But first, let's hit up that listener mail.
Okay.
Which comes from T. Grimm in the NWR Discord. And he says, "This email is probably John bait. I recently decided to replay Star Fox Adventures because of all the N64 prototype leaks. I remember liking this game in 2002. For context, Ocarina of Time and Star Fox 64 were probably my favorite two N64 games at the time, so a combination thereof was everything I ever wanted. Didn't like Majora's Mask at the time, I grew to love it with the 3DS port." Side note, I agree with that. That's how I feel about Majora's Mask as well.
Loved it the whole time.
Yeah. Way to be a trendsetter, John.
Yep.
Going back now, I'm really impressed by the visuals of Star Fox Adventures. I didn't remember the GameCube being able to do that level of lighting. Plus, I prefer the Ocarina of Time formula. Tricky is still annoying, but Edgy Fox is kind of funny. It feels like they tried to turn him into 90s Bart Simpson. I was wondering if you would follow me on a daydream. Imagine a world where Star Fox sold well. So well that Nintendo made more Star Fox Adventures spin-off games. What would you have wanted? I was thinking about the possibilities of a GameCube sequel or a Wii sequel. Then something dawned on me. Imagine a GBA sequel where it has Star Fox 1-style 3D segments and 2D Zelda-style dungeons. I wish we lived on that timeline. Anyways, hope bringing up Star Fox Adventures gets your nostalgia gears moving. So, John, I feel like you've been waiting your entire life to answer this question.
I have. So a couple things I want to touch on. First of all, just a quick update on the Dinosaur Planet ROM that came out. Was that early January, February? I don't remember.
I think it was February.
So quick update on that. They have started the community on Discord that's been working with that ROM has started to release patches for the ROM to fix glitches, make new areas accessible. So things are at work. It was previously something where you were kind of having to hack your way through, and now they're actually making progress on patching the game to fix things, such as making the menu work consistently and other popular things. Cool progress there. Good job, guys. So as far as a daydream where Star Fox sold well on GameCube, I will point out I'm pretty sure Star Fox Adventures was a greatest hits title on GameCube, right? Like I think that game did sell pretty well for a GameCube game. I think the fact that it has a sequel on the same system is a pretty good indication that it probably did okay.
I feel like what really put the nail in the coffin for Star Fox Adventures as like that model is the fact that Rare left, because you lost the people who made that game.
And it is so, and I was going to comment because he kind of hints at this. The original Dinosaur Planet, and then it became a Star Fox game, but the original title formatting was Star Fox Adventures : Dinosaur Planet.
Yeah.
Which I always thought kind of sounded, and I remember thinking at the time, like, oh, Star Fox Adventures is going to be like a new spin-off series. And this one's Star Fox Adventures Dinosaur Planet, but then there might also be Star Fox Adventures something else.
Yeah.
And then that changed, if it just became Star Fox Adventures. I remember having that thought when it was first teased with that title and thinking that was going to be a thing that happened.
That would have been cool. I will point out Star Fox Adventures sold more than Paper Mario the Thousand Year Door. So
statistically more likely to get a remake.
It was according to the Wikipedia list that I brought up, which, you know, I'll put some not 100. I have not checked all the sources. It was the 11th best selling game on GameCube, which,
OK, that's pretty good.
Doesn't sound that bad. But then you look at how like Melee sold like 7.5 million units. Mario Kart was just shy of 7. And then you get down and Star Fox Adventures didn't crack 2 million.
I think you have to look at it in the context of the GameCube. Star Fox Adventures did pretty well in the grand scheme of that platform.
Yeah, the games that was around it that like Metroid Prime barely outsold it. Metroid Prime is listed as 2 million copies sold. Star Fox Adventures has 1.75 million. It's ahead of Resident Evil 4, F-Zero GX.
Wow.
The first Resident Evil, even Twilight Princess, although Twilight Princess, I feel like doesn't count totally because it came out on Wii first.
Yes, I will say of those two Zelda games, Twilight Princess and Star Fox Adventures, I think Star Fox Adventures is a better Zelda game, but you know, that's,
I still like the dungeons better in Twilight Princess.
I like some of them. There's some garbage in, like, the water dungeon in Twilight Princess, I think is terrible. The sky dungeon with the ukus.
I like the double hook shot, though.
It's fine. I just hate that dungeon. The music is a bad time.
But so if we're looking at, let's say, yeah, I mean, maybe in this timeline, Rare doesn't leave Nintendo.
Sure.
And there's more Star Fox Adventures games. Like, would they all continue to be 3D Zelda-like games? Or would you think they would go to different genres?
I think that would be that's a genre that so few people can actually do well. Like, there's a reason there aren't a lot of 3D Zelda-like.
It's really hard.
They're really hard. I think it was the I don't remember who it was, but it was one of the developers around the time that I think Darksiders 3 was coming out. And they asked them, like, why are you guys still the only people besides Nintendo kind of doing this Zelda stuff? And he's like, because it's really hard. Like, these games are incredibly hard to make, and there's a reason that, like, that the Zelda games are so popular is because Nintendo is one of the only places that can really do it well. And I think Star Fox Adventures is a really good game in that formula. It's important to remember that it was a well-received game when it came out.
Yeah.
The perception of it now is like, oh, you know, that Star Fox game. That was a thing that happened later. And largely resulted from the YouTube scene of, like, let's find games that are fun to hate on. When Star Fox Adventures came out, it was popular. It received very good reviews. NWR gave it 2 8 out of 10s, which totals up to an 88 out of 10, which is a very good score. So you have to keep that in mind. I like his pitch of a GBA sequel where it's presumably like a top down.
I mean, that's the game that I would most want to play, honestly.
I'm thinking, like, did you ever play the Banjo game on, was it Grunty's Revenge?
No, I did not.
What was the Game Boy Advance one?
I think it was Grunty's Revenge.
It's cool
Revenge.
Because they do a fairly good job of it still being Banjo Kazooie, just being top down. And yeah, I feel like a Star Fox Adventures in that style could have been cool. And the other thing they could do then is that there's a lot of story content that they had pitched for Dinosaur Planet that they ultimately didn't do.
Maybe that even Saber.
Yeah, you could bring Saber in. You could bring in tons of Crystal's plot that they took out. Yeah, there's a lot you could do there.
I feel like if they were gonna do that GBA game, it would totally be Zelda 2 inspired.
Oh, yeah, that'd be cool.
What would he down thrust, yeah, with a gun?
Yeah. Yeah, and you can do, there's a game on Game Boy Advance called Star X, which I do enjoy that it's just Star Fox with two fewer letters. But it's just a SNES Star Fox clone, and it's not great, but it does show
they get it
you
to work.
Can do, yeah, it runs really well. Like, you can do that on a GBA. So that would have been cool. There's still time. Nintendo, you're friendly with Microsoft. Now is the time to have a Microsoft-made Star Fox Adventures 2. Or at the very least, get an HD version of Star Fox Adventures on Switch. Before Thousand Year Door, obviously, because it's a more popular game. Objectively. That's just numbers. I'm not, you know, that's not an opinion-based thing.
I'm going to go on, here's my, mostly off the cuff of my head, of this alternate reality. I
the
feel like
cuff of your head?
Off the cuff
Do
of my head.
You wear a cuff of your head on your head?
off the top of the dome.
Yes.
Let's go with so fundamentally, Rare can't leave Nintendo for this to happen.
Sure.
I feel like you're just or actually, if Rare were to leave, what developer would be working on Star Fox Adventures?
Are we talking back at the time that Rare left, or like now?
Let's say mid 2000s.
Okay.
Ooh.
I'm trying to think of other. You'd still want it to be, you know what? How about Retro Studios?
That's Metroid Prime 2 does not exist.
Right, and that's fine. Listen, so you gotta crack through a few eggs to make an omelet. And if I'm gonna kill off a Metroid Prime game, it's gonna be Metroid Prime 2. But yeah, no, I'm trying to think of people like outside of Nintendo's, because like obviously the people who were working for Nintendo at that time were actively making games. So if we're trying to think of somebody who wasn't busy,
this is going to be my pitch. Rare still sold to Microsoft. That still happens.
Mm-hmm.
Nintendo's trying to figure out. Star Fox Adventures winds up selling millions of more copies. It's as popular as Melee on the GameCube. Mm-hmm. in this alternate reality. So they have to make a sequel. And they make a sequel and they get Insomniac Games to make Star Fox Adventures 2.
Oh.
And it's okay. A game that, you know, it's supposed to come out around, they're trying to make it a GameCube game. It winds up getting pushed to, it comes out on the Wii in 2007. That's mm-hmm. what I'm saying. In this alternate reality, this means there are way less fewer Ratchet and Clank games.
That'd be fine.
And Resistance Fall of Man doesn't come out on PlayStation 3. And a few people are sad about that, I guess.
Yeah, nothing of value is lost.
But then once it hits the Wii, so Star Fox Adventures 2, let's say the subtitle for that is Star Fox Adventures Going Commando.
Yes, obviously.
That's Star Fox Adventures Tools of Destruction comes out on the Wii in 2007. And then just because Insomniac did have this insane rate of just pumping out Ratchet and Clank games, we get like three more Star Fox Adventures games on the Wii. And because of that, there's also one that launches on the Wii U, which completely saves the Wii U. They like reinvent what 3D Zelda is. It's basically Star Fox Adventures Breath of the Wild that Insomniac and Monolith somehow team up and make. And that comes out on the Wii U in 2013.
What a butterfly effect you've built.
Yeah. And then with that, the Zelda series stops existing because Star Fox is so thoroughly outclassed everything about the Zelda games. Because Insomniac Games has just unlocked the key. And then it all builds to, in 2018, a launch title on Nintendo's next system that comes out holiday 2018. It's a Marvel game, except for instead of Spider-Man, it's Marvel's Rocket the Raccoon.
Mm, still developed by Insomniac?
Yeah.
Because no point during this crazy success did Nintendo buy Insomniac.
No,
just left them out there as a third party. Yeah. No, that makes sense.
And then in 2019, they Nintendo buys them. Meanwhile, in this alternate reality, Next Level Games never works with Nintendo. And instead, Next Level Games makes a popular arcade sports game with Sony. No, that doesn't make sense. What do they make?
No, Next Level Games gets purchased by Microsoft and put into Microsoft's new handheld division. Where they make a squad-based tactical shooter online.
And it's very well received. It's Halo Federation Force.
Yep. ODST Force.
Yeah, Halo ODST Force. It comes out on the Microsoft 3DX.
Yeah, it's super popular. It sells very well.
They also made Grabbed by the Ghoulies Dark Moon. They started working with Rare. and they also... Yeah,
Grabbed by the Ghoulies is inevitable. That happens in every timeline.
And they also make Conker's Bad for Punch-Out on the Xbox.
So Conker... So wait. So Rare... Huh, okay.
And somehow it's less offensive than Punch-Out on Wii.
Yeah. Yeah.
That was fun.
So to make this way simpler for you, now that you've weaved such an epic tale, the thing is that after Microsoft bought Rare was still making games for Nintendo handhelds. There was nothing stopping this GBA Star Fox Adventures game from happening.
That's true.
Because Banjo Pilot
with THQ
made, yep, while they were owned by Microsoft. Diddy Kong Racing DS was made while they were owned by Microsoft. I don't know if the GBA Banjo game was made by while they were owned by Microsoft, but they did a lot on Nintendo platforms while they were owned by Microsoft.
I mean, they even did Diddy Kong Racing DS was Rare.
Right, with a Nintendo character as the main character while owned by Microsoft. They did a Viva Pinata game on DS, right? Was that actually them?
Yeah. Okay, so the guy who did Star Fox Adventures, Lee Schoonman, his next thing was he was a producer on Cameo.
That makes sense. Cameo has some energy to it.
Yeah. I will say Cameo's a real good game. I've been thinking about replaying that on Series X.
There's something about like the art design of Cameo that you can spot that there's some Star Fox Adventures lineage there.
Yeah. Solid launch game. Like unheralded is the fact that Rare actually delivered like solid launch games for the Xbox 360.
Yeah.
I'm not gonna say Perfect Dark Zero is a game you should play again now, but as an online shooter in 2005, really fun.
Well, it was a pretty good looking game at the time.
Yeah.
It used a lot of the you know, the crazy things the 360 could do. It ran like garbage, but we didn't care about frame rates back then.
Yeah.
It was a different time. But yes, it should have happened. Was Rare already purchased by Microsoft by the time that Star Fox Assault came out?
Yeah.
So that's what happened. I mean,
we're
asking who would have made it, but it was Namco and they did.
Yeah.
Like, that's exactly what happened.
But anyway, on to our main topic.
On to much worse experiences.
So I know you, from the start, you were really down on Balan Wonderworld from when it was announced. Mm-hmm. I know, like, it got announced and it seemed like, okay, potentially promising 3D platformer.
You guys didn't look at the trailer.
I did see the trailer. It looked like it might
fun. You didn't look at their feet. Around on that trailer.
I did not look at the feet. I will.
Yep.
You're a foot guy.
Yep, that's, you know, the first thing I see.
Yeah.
Look at the people, you're like,
look at them feet, girl. Mm-hmm.
Slipping all over the place. No sense of momentum.
So Balan Wonderworld is a game coming out on Nintendo Switch. It remarkably looks even worse on Switch. I think visually it doesn't look like terrible on other platforms, but playing that Switch demo, woof.
The art design isn't good anywhere.
Yeah.
But it holds together on other platforms.
I will be curious. We're recording this 2 days before the game comes out. There is no sign of any kind of review copies or reviews. I will honestly be shocked if there is anything up review-wise on day one of this game. It seems like Square Enix might be aware that this is kind of a tire fire of a video game. And I went from being like, oh, well, you know, maybe it's all right. And then I played that demo and I'm staying the hell away.
Why did they put out a demo?
It was a bad idea.
Even me looking at this going like, well, this looks terrible. I do really like 3D platformers.
Yeah.
And might have just in a moment of weakness been like, I'll do this. But like, not now.
Yeah. And it's been like so soundly like dismissed.
Yeah.
I'm really curious to see like just what happens. It does seem like it's a producers like scheme. Gonna have Max Bialystock showing up being like, you know, you can make more money with a flop than with a hit. But the two people that are kind of at the leading this game with this new studio is Yuji Naka and Naoto Oshima, who are two people who are known for being co-creators on Sonic the Hedgehog. Naka was the programmer for the original Sonic the Hedgehog. It's also worth calling out that like Yuji Naka was like heralded as a really great programmer back in the day. He's responsible for in the original Phantasy Star, which you can play a really cool Sega Ages version on Switch. The first person like three pseudo 3D segments, like they were possible because of Yuji Naka's programming.
Yeah, well, and I mean, even the first Sonic the Hedgehog, I mean, it you know, blast processing obviously isn't a real thing, but the scroll speed of that game was impressive.
I think Naka's gotten over the years some crap because I think he kind of took on like I'm the father of Sonic when really there were multiple people that were involved in that, including Oshima, who is the character designer for Sonic the Hedgehog. I will just call out because the game totally slaps. He was also a designer on Tommy Lasorda Baseball, which is a really early Genesis baseball game that I played a ton of as a kid, and is definitely for my money, one of the best baseball games of the era, like hands down.
There was a baseball game on SNES. Was it Ken Griffey? Was there one that was made by Rare?
Yeah. So that's the Ken Griffey Jr. Was Super Nintendo. So the first one I think is by Software Creations. The second one on Super Nintendo is by Rare.
Yes. And it has a score by David Wise.
Yeah.
And like, man, the music is good.
Yeah, I will say that I say of the era with Tommy Lasorda baseball, the release date that I'm looking at right here is 1989. I would consider those Griffey games to be a different era. Because I think the first Griffey game is like 94 or 95, because they came out late in the Super Nintendo's life. And then there's the N64 games that were by Angel Studios, who would later become Rockstar San Diego and make the Red Dead games. Those baseball games on N64 are at least I never really played the second one on N64 of the Griffey games, but the first one is an all-timer in my book. Like, not quite to the level of Super Mega Baseball or MVP Baseball 2005, but definitely up there. I played a buttload of that game. And it also has like unlockable rosters where it's just like people from Nintendo. I think there's like an NOA team and an Angel Studios team. And it's like, that's actually like, that's probably one of my earliest memories of like learning who worked on games, because I would just unlock those teams and be like, oh, that's Minoru Arakawa. He's a pretty good leadoff hitter.
Yes. I know nothing else about him. What were we talking about?
Naka and Oshima, you know, worked on the Sonic the Hedgehog games kind of throughout the entirety of the 90s. Naka left Sega in 2006. He did not work on Sonic 2006. We confirmed that.
But he did work on Shadow the Hedgehog.
He did work on Shadow the Hedgehog.
Yes.
Unfortunately. Oshima left.
Unfortunate. It depends on what you want out of a Sonic game. Shadow the Hedgehog is either the absolute, like, dumpster fire bottom or the peak. It depends on what you're in it for.
Yeah, and then Oshima actually left Sega way earlier. He left in 1999, basically after Sonic Adventure came out. And here's the part, I feel like we've spent a lot of time talking about Yuji Naka in the context of Balan Wonderworld. I think he's also the more prominent person involved.
Yes.
As far as even
more of a public figure.
Yeah. But Oshima might even be more relevant to Nintendo fans. And he's, you know, working on that game on Balan Wonderworld, primarily as a character designer, like he was on Sonic the Hedgehog so many moons ago. But he left Sega 1999, and he formed the company R-Toon that, first off, because we always need to mention Xbox games, R-Toon made the Blinks the Time Sweeper series.
Hell yeah.
Which, those are those backwards compatible on Series X?
I think they might be.
They should be.
You keep talking, I'll look it up.
Yeah. So the Blinks the Time Sweeper games are what R2 made. They also worked on Yoshi's Universal Gravitation, which is hot trash. They also made Yoshi's Island DS, which I don't like that game.
It is a game that I'll be honest, until that came out on Wii U, I didn't realize that was a game. And like, I bought it on, I'm like, wait, there was a Yoshi game on DS that wasn't like a remake of Yoshi's. All right. And yeah, it is the most just soulless game I think I've ever played, with the exception perhaps of Yoshi's New Island.
Yeah. Although, humorously enough, he also made Yoshi's New Island by working at the follow up company, RZest.
Well, if at first you don't succeed, try again.
Yeah, and then R-Toon is also responsible for the horrifically bad Wii Motion Plus game, Fling Smash, which is just really shitty. And they also apparently helped out with developing The Last Story, which I didn't know that.
Oh, okay. Interesting. Blinks the Time Sweeper, by the way, is backwards compatible, so you can play it in 4K on the Xbox Series X.
All right, Game Club. Coming soon. That's like half a joke,
and I'm sure it's like $2.
Yeah, might be looking into buying that after this. They also did. They helped out with Blue Dragon. So I think Oshima and R-Toon definitely had a relationship with Mistwalker, with Hironobu Sakaguchi, because they also helped. He did character design work for Terra Battle, which is the mobile game that is responsible for us losing like 8 good years of Sakaguchi's development time. Which I will say, first Terra Battle, not really that bad. It's just the fact that like everything after that is garbage and failed. That may be the worst part, that like Terra Wars and Terra Battle 2 just did not succeed. But now we're getting Fantasian soon, which, by the way, did you hear? Fantasian's likely coming out in mid-April.
Sweet.
Yeah. And don't worry, it's part one of two. So I'll be talking about Fantasian in April and then talking about it later this year when the second half comes out.
Oh, you know, I'll throw out the bet right now. I think the first part will hit Switch when the second part comes out.
If you win the bet, we'll play Blinks the Time Sweeper. If you lose the bet, then we'll play Blinks the Time Sweeper.
I was going to say, is there a situation where you don't want to be playing Blinks the Time Sweeper in 4K? Because I don't know if we can be friends anymore.
Yeah, I mean, that might be our next show might be talking about Blinks the Time Sweeper after we play through it. But yeah, so R-Toon eventually like shut down in 2011. It was like purchased by another company, and then R-Zest came about, and they made Yoshi's New Island, bleh. And Hey Pikmin's all right. I'll defend that game a little bit.
I did play all the way through Yoshi's New Island, which I think I'm proud of. It was a game that like I didn't actively hate it while I was playing. I just felt nothing, and I just kept feeling nothing until credits rolled.
I think my thing in which I think that Yoshi's Island DS just sucks, and I think Yoshi's New Island is just more like inoffensive, is I think, well, one, Yoshi's New Island's soundtrack is awful, which is why I'm glad I played it predominantly on mute.
I think Yoshi's New Island, I think the one song they wrote from it, it's that song is fine, but like you need more than one song.
Yeah.
And if you haven't played it, that isn't like a joke. There is only one song in the game, and they play it on every level. And it's maddening.
Yeah.
And it will drive you insane.
The gameplay, though, I think is like totally fine. It's just
totally. Oh, yeah. Better than DS.
Way better than DS. I mean, maybe DS tried some new things, but like New Island is just gameplay wise, like a totally okay Yoshi game.
I do think its art is uglier than DS.
Yeah, I'll agree with that.
Yeah, it tries to do kind of like a Donkey Kong Country style thing, and it doesn't really work.
So other things that R-Zest did, as well as R-Toon, R-Zest was a developer on the Street Pass at Mii Plaza. They also made different games that came out across the updates, the Street Pass games. Actually, no, that was Yuji Naka and... God, I'm getting them confused.
It is interesting how like closely related they were, despite not directly working together on a lot of this stuff.
Yeah,
like how their paths were very parallel. And
yeah,
like
it's like Oshima leaves a room and Naka walks in. And is like, I missed him. All right, I'll work on a Street Pass game.
Yeah,
but Prope did Street Pass Mansion. They did Fishing and they did Chef. Or Ultimate Angler, Feed Me, and Monster Manor. The Fishing one and the Mansion one are both great. I don't remember the Chef one.
I don't remember the Chef one at all. I remember playing I did the Shmup one.
Yeah, that was really good. I forget who did that one. I think that was Good Feel. Good Feel did that.
That makes sense why it was good.
But other games that Prope worked on, that's Yuji Naka's company that he formed after he left Sega in 2006.
They sell Prope and Prope accessories.
The first game that they came out with was the future tapping game, Let's Tap. If you've not heard the earworm theme song from Let's Tap, highly recommend it. It is a game in which it comes with a cardboard box that you put your Wii remote on and you tap the box to play different games.
You're of the opinion that this game is good, right?
I'm of the opinion that I was in college when it came out, and I was visiting my friends at a college.
So Neil was high at the time.
No, I was drunk. I like was visiting my friends at a bigger college in New Jersey that I don't know. You know what's screwed? At Rutgers. There's like one big college in New Jersey, and it's that. And I went to like a Walmart and got Let's Tap and then brought it back and we just like drank shots and played Let's Tap. That was the most fun I ever had with it. And then I didn't really, it's not really that good. It's funny and the music is good. I am, however, an eternal stan for the complimentary game Let's Catch. It was a WiiWare game. Have you ever played Let's Catch?
I do not believe so. Does it use the same box?
No, it does not. So Let's Catch is a game about just like throwing a baseball around. Like that's the game. It's your control in the game is you're holding the Wii remote and there's kind of a rhythm to just like flicking it to like throw the ball at you know, different arcs. There's some fun multiplayer stuff in there. There's like a hot potato game. So like, I think everybody kind of has their own Wii remote and you're just kind of like shaking the remote and like kind of trying to get the timing down. It's a little frantic. It's fun. And then there's this really in-depth story mode for Let's Catch in which I think it's just you're me and you're in a park just throwing the ball around, but you need to like do it with the proper timing. Cause that was back when it would be like the ball would come at you and you'd have to like hit A and B at the right time as if you were like clasping your mitt.
Mm-hmm.
So there was like it was like this nice, like kind of rhythm element to it where you're like trying to catch the ball and do it in good timing, throw ball at the right area and stuff like that, and you'd be having these conversations with people and it just kind of starts off, it's like, oh, you know, like had a good day, blah blah blah, and then it's like there's this kid who's just like, my parents are in a fight, and then it starts getting better, how like his, and then like you have a catch with his dad and his dad's like, I don't know man, like works really hard, and then like a famous baseball player comes around. And he's just like, yeah, sometimes I like to get away from it all and just come to this park and just throw a ball around. And like the kid comes back and you talk to him for a while. And the baseball player comes back and it's just like, actually, I'm an FBI agent. And you're like, what? and then it turns out that the reason why he's coming back to that park is he's like an undercover FBI agent. And there's aliens around there. Because meanwhile, while you do the catch thing, every now and then, just a UFO will appear on screen. And if you hit the UFO, you get bonus points because, of course. And that's probably why the aliens just flying around being like, what the hell, man? and then the end of the game, like the final level, spoilers for a game that you can't buy anymore, you meet the alien and you go to the moon. So the physics is all different. So it makes it harder. And you talk to the alien. I forget exactly what the conversation with your alien is, but I think he's just basically like, yo, man, what's up? I'm an alien. Like we could kill people. I don't think we will. Like, peace. And then the credits roll.
Huh. That, did Naka have some stuff he needed to work out? Or,
maybe.
Like, what?
I mean, then he made a game that ends in a question mark after that. So, Really, I just wanted to talk about Yuji Naka so I could finally just rattle off why Let's Catch is the greatest game that he's ever made. But it's an extraordinarily chill game. And, like, the story is, like, weirdly kind of batshit insane and heartfelt.
Yeah.
Anyway, Ivy the Kiwi is a pretty cool game. That's where you know there's a bird that's running around and you need to like use the touchscreen or the pointer to kind of like mm-hmm. give them a path to go through the level.
And now they're making Balaam Wonderworld, where they've made it. I assume it's as done as it's going to be.
And then Rodea came out from Pro.
Oh yeah, dude, Rodea is amazing. Because, and I think I've said this on the show before, but the point in development as I guess a publisher where you give up to the point where you put two copies of the game in every box because you kind of have two versions of it and you don't know what else to do is just peak game publishing. And I'm so excited. I got my copy for $4. And I think it was still sealed. And don't let anyone tell you that the Wii version is pretty good. It's just slightly better than the Wii U version. It's still the same exact game. It just controls slightly better. And weirdly looks better. Like the Wii U version is like really desaturated and dark. And the Wii version is kind of like bright and pleasant. I think I have the 3DS version, but I don't think I've played it. Because, listen, once you've gone through it twice, the urge to do it a third time isn't quite there. It's a terrible game. and I don't know why it exists.
Yeah, and I have a feeling we might be having that conversation about wondering why Balan Wonderworld exists when it comes out.
I feel like I have to get Balan to sit it next to Rodea. Like it feels like the spiritual sequel.
Yeah, I mean it might be. It also feels like it's. I mean, we didn't really go over like knights at all.
It definitely has a lot of the art style of knights.
Yeah.
Though Rodea drew comparisons to knights too in its like flying around gameplay. Did either of these guys actually, were either of them involved in the Wii Knights game?
I don't think so, because they both would have been gone from Sega, and for Naka would have been relatively recent, too.
So they're just, like, trying desperately to, like, find a way back to Knights.
Did you ever play Journey of Dreams?
Is that the Wii one?
Yes. Knights Journey of
Dreams. I don't think so. I've played a little bit of, like, the actual original one. I don't think I ever played the Wii one. Is it good?
I don't remember. I played some of it and did not really enjoy it. I was more excited for the idea of it than I was the actual game.
I do like the idea of just picking up a game like that and making another one.
Yeah.
Like that idea appeals to me.
Yeah, it is Takashi Iizuka, who's basically one of the heads of Sonic Team. So he kind of took over. You know, after I think he's the guy who's basically just the face of Sonic Team in the West.
Yeah.
He's high up there. He's been a director on a number of games, worked on the series starting with Sonic 3, credited as the director of Sonic Adventure 1 and 2.
Did he do Sonic 06?
Let's confirm. No, did everybody just scrub this from the record?
Nobody, it's all the credits is just John Doe over and over again, whatever the Japanese version of John Doe is.
Who made this game?
No one knows. It just appeared.
Shun Nakamura is listed as the director. He worked on Samba de Amigo, so he can't be that bad.
I assume that, and I don't know that much about the development history of Sonic 06, I have to assume it had a troubled development.
Yeah.
Because, like, the moment you pick it up, you go, this game had a troubled development. Like, it's one of the, like, you can just feel
it. I mean, the fact is that, like, Yuji Naka left during development. So, that's
that
probably
could be,
part
like,
of it.
It may be that, like, they started and then, like, didn't know what to do. And they're like, I don't know, should we make Eggman, like, a weirdly realistic scrotum guy? And they were like, yeah, that seems like the logical progression. Have Sonic kiss that lady. Like, it just, like, it all immediately fell apart.
No, man, Sonic's turned 15. It's time to get wet.
Yeah. Though, I guess they tried to give him a human girlfriend in the first one. So, it's the most authentic to the original Sonic vision. Sonic 06 is the most authentic Sonic game. Send tweet.
Scanning through the Wikipedia page of just the development thing, one, there's, like, 7 paragraphs that are pretty filled out about the development history. There's a quote, as development progressed, Sonic Team faced serious problems. In March 2006, Naka left.
That was the serious problem.
He said he resigned because he did not want to continue making Sonic games and instead wished to focus on original properties.
That's fair. Sakurai should do that.
So yeah, and that was also around the time when Sega was presented with development kits for the Wii and were told to make a Sonic game, and then Secret Rings, which is secretly way better than Sonic 06. Maybe not secretly.
I don't think that's a secret.
Yeah.
I don't think that's what the secret is about.
Secret Rings
isn't
bad. Like,
is Secret Rings one of the ones that's like very rail line?
Yeah. Yeah, it's the first one on Wii.
Yeah, I'm not a fan of that. I'm not a fan of any of them.
Yeah, no, I mean, I played way too much Sonic and the Secret Rings back in 2007 because I just basically, like, played whatever the new Wii game was during that era. I'm not going to say it's good. I'm just going to say it's better than other Sonic games.
Which, yeah, that's fair. It's not a high bar, but it is a bar of some sort.
Better than Heroes, better than 06.
Yeah.
So that's everybody be excited for Balan Wonderworld.
You know what'll be funny is in the time between the demo and when this game came out, they just fixed it.
Yeah, it just comes out and it's perfect.
They like put out that demo and like took all the feedback really constructively and they were like, all right, here we go. And then they just fixed the game. and like it's out now and is a huge success and was like this, you know.
This episode ages poorly.
Yeah, everyone, like it sold out, everyone bought it, it like changed game design as we know it. And then at, you know, 10 a.m. we put out our episode and people are just like, oh, we should cancel NWR. Like this was the game that saved the world. It changed everything.
It's like the Bill and Ted song, but for video games.
Yeah. That's fine. If I go down, I hope it's Yuji Naka that takes me down. That seems fair.
All right. Well, this seems like an episode of Connectivity. Hope you enjoyed. Yeah, definitely something. I hope you enjoyed our alternate realities, Star Fox Adventures, and our Yuji Naka and Naoto Oshima trip down memory lane. And go play Let's Catch if you can. Until next time, check us out on Twitter at ConnectivityNWR or email us some listener mail so that way we can have more fodder for other stupid things at connectivity@NintendoWorldReport.com.
If you put Star Fox in the subject line, we read it like way faster.
Definitely. I won't lie, ignored that one until John was like, we got fan mail. And I was like, what? You got fan mail. I did. A fun discussion.
You got trapped.
Yep.
Send emails for things you want to force Neil to have a conversation with me about. That's
I don't hate, like, here. I don't think Star Fox Adventures is that great. I also don't think it's, like, trash. So I don't like mind talking about Star Fox. Like, I feel like it's one of those things where, like, of its era, 8 out of 10. Now I would not be that high on it.
7.9.
7.8. 7.75.
Right. That's fine. That's my sweet spot of games. That 7.5 area. All right. I'll stop interrupting your ending now.
Bye, everybody.
Bye.
This video was made possible by our generous supporters on Patreon. Check out patreon.com/NWR for all the details.